Tougher measures to prevent imported cases of coronavirus variants entering the UK will be set out by ministers, with extra testing expected for all international arrivals. Matt Hancock is expected to give further details in the Commons later, and George Eustace, the Environment Secretary, said he's confident that the plan for putting arrivals into hotel quarantine will start running next week.
You would still have British nationals who would then be trying to get back, and they could also be potentially carrying the virus, so it may not gain very much. There would be some difficulties and problems with a total border closure.
Brussels' decision to place barriers on live UK shellfish exports is indefensible, according to the Environment Secretary. George Eustace insisted there are no legal barriers to prevent the trade and has called on the European Commission to abide by existing regulations. And 4 in 10 people who needed financial support while self-isolating say they weren't able to access any. Research from the Red Cross suggests that issues include schemes and funding not being available locally. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Olivia Mouncer.
TalkTalk's winter deals are here, with great offers across our fast, reliable 18-month fibre broadband plans. Average speeds from 38 up to 145 megabits per second, and prices starting from just £22 a month. All with award-winning super safe online security included. Perfect for streamers, gamers, callers, workers and shoppers. Get high speeds at low prices with our winter deals. Search TalkTalk Fibre. TalkTalk, for everyone. Offer ends 17th of Feb, subject to local availability. £4.95 postage and packaging. T's and C's apply.
This is Colourful Radio.
Hi everyone, it's Dr. Sandra Isabel here. Right now, lots of us will be thinking about what we can do to become healthier and feel better in 2021. If there's something you'd like to change in your life right now, like losing a bit of weight or getting active, the Better Health website has lots of free, easy tips and tools to help you make healthier choices. Making small, simple changes could help you to feel better, healthier, and more able to fight diseases. To find out more, search Better Health. Let's do this.
FCA investigates 30 firms over pension transfer advice.
This is just one headline about pensions. If you were convinced to change your pension to a self-invested personal pension or SIP, then you may have been given bad advice, which could cost thousands. APJ solicitors will fight to get the compensation you deserve, no win, no fee. Terms and conditions apply. Text EASY to 60777. Text EASY to 60777 now. APJ. Authorised and regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority.
Could you look an intensive care nurse in the eyes and tell them you're staying at home? If you really need to go out, do you wash your hands the moment you get back? If you have to let someone in, like an emergency plumber, do you always open your windows to let in fresh air? Anyone can catch COVID-19. Anyone can pass it on. If we all stick to the rules, we can help stop the spread. Stay home. Protect the NHS. Save lives.
Live on digital radio, colorfulradio.com and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
In my head, I see you for dream, I know they feel better. But I wanna give you my lalala. Come and try my lalala. But I wanna give you my lalala. Come and try my lalala.
I'm not gonna have a deal with Yvonne Nelson. Yeah, now I go there, now I go there. See you with the Genevieve. Cause you know say me wanna give you my love. I wanna show you the world. I wanna write down with you, baby. Give me your money too, baby. I want yeah, 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 yeah. Baby, carry me go tema. Let me like Zulimontari. Party in the honey. Nani
go give you go lo lo. Me I no go give you go go.
Abi?
Oh, when you nagga, me I no go give you go lo lo.
Final and anything where you say be the final, and you be the cut to my spinal. Fallen, yeah, that's a send be na man can, yeah. Po, you know, go fit to contaminate. Mini wouldn't tell me love, no behave.
Life.
Colorful radio.
Oh,
Colourful Life. Colourful Radio.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome to the second part of Owning It with Iola. This morning, I'm joined by two fabulous entrepreneurial power couple duo in Dele and Louisa, and they are the founders of Kunda Kids. I'll let you tell them all, let them tell you all about it. But basically, in a response to the uprisings of Black Lives Matter and also the end SARS protest in Nigeria, they, you know, being young parents themselves, they were looking for products for their little boy, and they couldn't find anything. And so they basically decided to form this company, Kunda Kids, which I'll tell us all about, in an effort to address and counterbalance the negative narrative that's been going out. And so it's an absolute honor. They're my first couple. And because we're in this month of love, of Valentine's Day, and you guys know I'm all about Black love. So it's an absolute honor to have this power duo with us. So Louisa and Dele, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Iola. Nice to be on the show.
Thank you for coming on. So I know that you guys have, you know, started this journey just last year during the pandemic, which is a massive feat in itself. But before we get into that, I'm just going to ask you just to take us on a little bit of a journey. Kunda Kids is also about serving children, essentially, as your main stakeholders, right? But I want to know firstly a little bit about your individual respective childhoods, if I may. So whoever wants to go first, I just want to know a little bit about, share with us, check us on the journey to where were you raised, you know, what kind of child were you?
Sure, I'll go first. So I was born in Uganda. And I moved to the UK with my parents when I was very young, so about two. And when I moved to the UK, I was fluent in Rinyankole, which is what we speak where I'm from in Uganda, and lost my mother tongue somewhere along childhood. I think just lack of people to speak it to and kind of lack of community where we were based in London. But I was schooled in the UK and I've grown up here pretty much all my life. I remember being a child and learning about African history in school. And that was such an awkward experience. So I really wish I wasn't speaking to children today who are actually having the same experience. It's quite disheartening to feel that things haven't progressed as much as I'd hope they would. But I remember being a child sitting in a class, being the only Black child sitting in my class and just learning about African history and learning about like slavery and just being told that that is pretty much who you are, your history and what you're about. And I remember not really having an education about much of my past, except from like me being Ugandan and my family, but much of like African history. So to be honest, my growth into self-identity came when I was like a little bit older. When I was a teenager, I started learning about like Marcus Garvey. Music was a big influence. Went through different stages. I was a bit of like a rap head at some time, you know, with Wu-Tang, and a lot of conscious rap through quite a significant period, and learning about what Blackness means to me as a young person, and then also to the difference in what it means to other people. So that's like a real very brief intro to me. But yeah, I was really privileged to go to Uganda at least like every 1 or 2 years all my life. My mom's always taken me back home. It's always made me feel really secure and connected in my roots. I never sort of felt like there was anything unappealing about being an African to me, despite what I was told as a child by other children, experiencing racism and bullying as a child because of your race, because of being different, and racial slurs. Like it's such a real thing. So I think definitely having some exposure to where I'm from really helped me with that. And I did recognize that lack of confidence with sometimes other children my age, and sometimes other friends who didn't have much exposure to where they're from. So I think I've really grown up having an awareness of how important that is, an awareness of my own privilege, I think, and a desire to definitely want to see whatever it is that I can do for my own son, and then for essentially his peers too, because I want him to be proud of where he's from, and I want his friends to respect and be proud of where he's from too.
Beautiful.
That's what got me.
it's lovely. It's lovely to learn, because, you know, it's always nice to learn a bit of, especially for the listeners, to learn a bit more about the owners. I don't know if you've seen, even on social media, there's been a big effort to kind of learn more about who's behind actual brands, you know, to ensure that it is a Black business, a Black-owned business, an African business. So thank you for sharing that with us. And Dele, as well, tell us a little bit about your background, because you're actually from Nigeria, right?
Yeah. I was born in Nigeria, grew up in Nigeria.
Yeah.
I only moved to the UK full-time 2017. That's coming to like 4 years now. Mm-hmm. My background, you know, born in Nigeria, grew up, been a very, very playful boy. Mm-hmm. I was the kind of child that whenever it's like a birthday or someone wants to buy me a gift, they either buy me like a toy gun or a football. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, at the space of having like water guns, pellet guns, you know.
Yeah. Also.
But people, nobody ever bought me a book. Well, don't let me say nobody, but people hardly buy me books, mm-hmm. right? So I didn't start reading as a child until a little later. And when I started reading as a child, the only kind of books I ever aspired to read were the Enid Blytons, right?
Right.
So
yes.
You read the Famous Fives and the likes, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't grow up reading African literature. Now, in part of the school curriculum, mm-hmm. we read some books like Eze Goes to School. Some of those books were part of school, but there were never things that I read at home. So even though I grew up in Nigeria, I never had real access to a lot of African stories, you know, teaching about African history and all. And I became a bit of an avid reader in my university days. That was when I started reading a lot of novels. That was when I became like a proper reader and reading so many books, right? And moving to the UK for me kind of like has changed me a lot, because I've come from a country where, you know, everybody, majority of the population is Black, right?
Yes.
You can aspire to be whatever you want to be. Everything is, you know, it's a level playing field. But then you come abroad and it's a slightly different conversation. And then when you realize that you're minorities, and then I started learning a lot about how children are growing up in the diaspora, and I, you know, started learning a lot about the lack of representation in children's literature, mm-hmm. right? And then when George Floyd happened, you know, like, I'm the kind of person that, you know, I always go to protests, right?
Okay.
But when George Floyd happened, mm-hmm. at my house, everybody was protesting, but I was like, there's something we need to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Louisa and I had so many conversations. Louisa was always at the protest, right? But we had a few conversations, and we decided, you know what? Let's see if we can build something to inspire the next generation, right? A lot of mistakes. We have made a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Parents have made a few mistakes. And I'll give you examples. Like me growing up in Nigeria, you go to school. If you speak your native language, I speak Yoruba. If you mm-hmm. speak Yoruba, you know, the teachers might spank you. Like, don't speak Yoruba. You
wow.
know, you need to speak English. You need to speak yeah. English. You need to speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those, and we're like, you know, we want to build Kunda Kids to help, to inspire the next generation and help them build pride in being mm-hmm. African. So, and how do we do that? By telling them real, authentic African stories mm-hmm. by
yes.
Africans. And that's why, you know, we're an all-African team.
Yeah. Just going to interject this there a little bit, Dele, because we've gone a little bit ahead of the story. But I just wanted to find out, because obviously, you, as you mentioned before, you know, you were inspired by the protests over here in terms of, and in the States in terms of Black Lives Matter, and also the NSTARS. But what was the sort of starting point? So you were having these conversations at home, but how did you when was it that you actually decided, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to put our, you know, invest into it? And how did you actually start that journey?
Well, the thing about my husband is that he has sparks of creativity really randomly in the morning. So there are times when I've woken up and he's just like, I've created a board game, or I have a brand new idea for something. So this is just happened to be one of those days where he woke up and he was like, you know, I have this idea. I've been thinking a lot about the conversations that we're talking about. And this was in April last year. I think maybe like March, April last year. We were just kind of at the beginning of lockdown, really kind of understanding what lockdown was going to mean. And so much in our lives was changing.
And we were finding content for Eric.
It's finding things for our young boy to engage him. Our schools were closed. So we started talking about it. And then it kind of started as, let's write some books for our son. And then in my mind, I was like, fantastic. That's even a wonderful Christmas present for him, maybe for us and his grandma. And he'll read them. And, you know, there were stories that his parents wrote. That was the initial idea. Okay. So in that process, we started looking for illustrators, and we started looking at, like, who were the ancient people in Africa that we want to know about? And then we realized how much we didn't know. So we were like, oh yeah, what about this person? And it was just an education for ourselves. So April to May, we were just like enjoying learning about people ourselves. And then it's after we started looking at illustrators and then having the conversation with Dele sisters and a few very close friends, we realized, like, wow, this is actually a real gap that is missing for our, at least for us and our demographic. So, you know, Black parents in the diaspora, just that small segment. And then it seemed to grow when I started having conversations with other parents, and not just African parents. We have my Brazilian friends, I have some mixed race friends, and a whole bunch of other people that were saying, I don't know anything about Africa. I feel really bad because I'm like embarrassed about the fact that I don't know anything. And I feel like I don't want my children to grow up racist, but I don't really know how to empower them. So all these things were pointing towards the fact that we need to do something. So around, I'd say, May, we had a very rough draft of stories. Which were
probably, how many stories did you start off with? Because you said you were looking at different, I know that you've got a series of books, but what did you start with? And
so we started out with five people.
Well, six.
Six, actually, yeah. Okay, we started out with six.
Can you share those with us, just for people listening, and what were the characters? Or
sure, so we have, at the moment, we have Mansa Musa from Mali, Queen Yaa from Ghana, Shaka Zulu from South Africa, and Queen Kitami from Uganda. Then we're also looking at Queen Amina from Nigeria and Queen Nzinga from Angola. Anybody else?
Those were where we started the project.
And, you know, we realized that there are still so many stories to tell. So that's where we started. Then we decided to find an editor, just because we were like, if we want to do this, let's do it well. And then in that process, we thought, actually, we should do this for people. We should do this for people. We should put something together for people. Yeah. And that earlier that year, we traveled to Uganda. We took my son for his first birthday. And we discovered that my grandma had called him Kunda, which means love.
Right. I was going to ask that, actually. Oh, lovely. Okay.
So it just felt natural. And for some reason, the name just stuck with us. And Iola, it wasn't something that we started saying, oh, we've got a business venture. It started so accidentally, but then also felt really organic. We felt like we were following a mission that we had been set, and like we would get inspiration to do one thing. Let's just write the stories. Okay, let's just find an illustrator. Okay, maybe we can find a printer. And we've just been continuously led, I think, through that inspiration and instinct.
Yeah, so I'll say the big trigger in all of this, you know, because lockdown kind of like unlocked our creativity. And we just started writing, you know, not so long. But it was when the old George Floyd happened. That was the I'll say that was the trigger point. That was when we realized, you know what, let's see how we can do this to really inspire the next generation. Well, we started chatting with our friends and we're like, you know what, we could actually do this to make a change.
Yeah.
We could do this and put it out for everyone. And then was at that point also, we realized, because our boy is just going to turn 2 next week.
Okay, happy birthday in advance.
Just the day before Valentine's Day. Yeah. So was at that point to realize, instead of writing for the very early age of like 0 to 2 or 0 to 3, mm-hmm. let's write something that will sit nicely for kids between 3 to 8, because mm-hmm. the picture book space has a serious lack of diversity. So it was at that very point we kind of defined the project very well. And, yeah. You know, another really interesting thing, I hope I'm not jumping ahead of the interview, but...
No, go ahead.
About the stories is, we're writing our stories in such a lovely way that it sits nicely with everyone. Because we really want to inspire the next generation. In our stories, we don't touch on things like slavery, colonization, and all of that, because we feel... let's bring out a lot of positive stories from Africa. Yes. When is Africa? Let it not be, oh, that's when we talk about the negative things, right? But let's have really good stories of African heroes doing really amazing things.
Yes, absolutely. And we definitely need more of that, because as Louisa said, you know, much of the experience for us, unfortunately, has been when you go to school and you learn about African or Black history, it literally starts from that premise of slavery and kind of stays there and ends there. Yeah. And so, you know, especially if you're experiencing, you know, where you're just the only Black person, it can be quite, you know, isolating, and it causes further division, and it causes, you know, that's this whole inferiority complex for Black children. So absolutely, you know, focusing on the good and the positive and the empowering was what you guys are absolutely doing. So you started this you know, this venture of becoming authors and publishers, but what were you doing before? I've jumped ahead of a little bit because I've missed out and I forgot to just share what you were doing before, and how have those skills from your previous, you know, roles in your career, how have they helped in this entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, actually, I'm quite excited to answer this question. So, you know, I have not had a very linear career, and it has been actually turned out to be one of my strengths. My journey through the things I'm interested in, my working profession, has been a little bit eclectic, and I feel like it has really come together very nicely in this project. So I graduated in journalism.
Okay.
I'd always wanted to be a graphic designer. So as well as pursuing kind of a writing and investigative career and curious mind, I've always been designing, teaching myself how to use different things, editing videos, editing audio, editing graphics, and playing around on, you know, everything that Adobe has to offer me, basically. So but never planning to really make a career out of it. I dropped out of wanting to pursue a career in graphic design because I was worried that to be honest, as a Black person, that I didn't want to be a starving artist, basically. And it was so difficult to see successful Black role models in industries that I was wanting to be in. And when you also come from an African background, you don't get a lot of support about going into the arts. Yeah. So I said, you know what, let me try and get on Forbes 30 under 30, and then I'll go and be a graphic designer. But I actually... from journalism ended up in marketing, which is another form of storytelling, to be honest.
Yes.
And we're both marketers. And in marketing, I really fell in love with market research, which is exploring people, their experiences, finding out about them, what inspires them, and help brands tap into that. So it was great to be able to do market research on this project, spend time with parents and children, really like observe them, and what we call actively listening and finding problems and identifying gaps is really fun. Dele, and he'll speak for himself, but just a point that before we were living in London, we were living in Cambridge, and we were in Cambridge because Dele was doing his MBA at Cambridge Judge Business School. So we found ourselves in Cambridge, and the sort of best job I saw going there at the time, which was an interesting opportunity, was to work in publishing. So I worked for about 3.5 years at Cambridge University Press, which is a huge publishing institution for academic and children's books, adults books, English learning books. During that whole time, I was kind of a bit like, I don't really intended to be here. I'm here because, you know, my husband's here and we're going to be here as a family. I'll do my best here, but it really is like a weird stop for me because books and publishing is not my area. Selling, like, so working for L'Oreal, working on lipsticks and makeups and cosmetics and stuff. But not long after I left to work where I'm working now was when we started Kinder Kids, and suddenly all of my learning that I got from Cambridge University Press in publishing, creating books, working with editors, working with publishers, understanding the book industry, marketing books, getting on Amazon, just became so valuable. So I think it's just a testament to the fact that sometimes in life you really don't know why you are where you are, but you have to trust in the process and believe that everything happens for a reason, and it will make sense. You just kind of have to, trust in the process. So that's just a little bit about me and my own
journey. I love that. I absolutely love that. It's like it came around full circle. And, you know, that's really encouraging, actually, because, you know, when you have these transferable skills, you never know when you may need them, you know, and it's always important to be able to express your creativity. So I'm really glad to hear as well that you're able to do that. And especially at this time during lockdown, when it's actually needed even more, isn't it? So that's beautiful. Can I ask you as well, like, just in terms of, you know, how have you found the entrepreneurial journey so far? Because obviously you've worked in these roles and then now you're actually running a business entity. How have you found that transition? Are you still working or is this now your full-time thing?
Yeah, we are still working.
I'll answer that, right? For me, just trying a little bit about my background, I've always worked in marketing ever since I left the university in Nigeria. Worked in marketing for so many years in Nigeria. And then at some point, I always wanted to move to the UK and I always wanted to get an MBA. So I decided to go to Cambridge to do my MBA at the Judge Business School in Cambridge. The interesting thing about doing my MBA at Cambridge is it's a program that helps you in a way discover the entrepreneur in you, because it encourages entrepreneurship a lot. Right. So going through the 1 year MBA program, for me, there was a mindset shift and I knew I'm going to have to venture into entrepreneurship very soon. Before the MBA, I was like, you know what, just get a job, get a good paying job, earn as much as you can and live a good life. But finishing the MBA, I still went back to paid employment, but my mindset was on what are we going to create? What's the next opportunity? What are we going to do differently versus what exists in the market? And I'll say, you know, thanks to Cambridge for that. Was a very expensive program, by the way.
But, but you're getting, you're on your way to get the return.
Was good, was worth it. And then so finishing the program had already equipped me in terms of having the right entrepreneurial mindset. And then when we started Kunda Kids, I still work in marketing right now. I still have a full-time job. But because I picked up skills of managing projects whilst getting things done, it's about being very efficient and knowing exactly what you want to do, knowing you have very little room for making mistakes. Good thing is Louisa has a very robust experience in market research. So a lot of what we do at Kunda Kids, when we want to put something out there, we test it and we make sure we're putting in a solid product out there with a high chance for success, right? So that's kind of how we run. In terms of the entrepreneurial journey, it's been good. Like
You're not pulling your hair out.
We totally love it. We're a two-man army. we're supply chain, we're customer service, we're
all of it. Yeah.
That is IT.
IT, cleaning person, marketing, designer, really, honestly, everything, and childcare as well. So,
yes, of course. Wow. So on that note, because is this your first child?
Yes. Yeah.
And how old is he?
He's going to be 2 next
week. Oh yeah, you did say, yeah, he's going to be 2. I remember he was young. So he's 2 years old. You know, you're in a sort of lockdown situation with regards to the pandemic, and you decided to start this business. How has that been for you guys in terms of working as a husband and wife? Do you, how's that experience been? And would you recommend it?
Well,
he's shaking his head, guys, but you'll be able to see that afterwards.
I will say, honestly, it has been exciting. It has been super exciting, super exhilarating. I'll say the good part is that when your partner and yourself have such a clear and aligned vision on something, it's wonderful. And I think, to be honest, as a family and as a couple, you do need to have alignment in where you want to go together as a family. Yeah. Definitely. So it's exciting that we're both like completely in this together. And we have a lot of respect for our other, like our commitments and work and things. Sally works in marketing, I work in innovation, but we both understand each other's works very, very well. I think it also, despite us working in similar industries, our strengths are quite different. And in terms of our personalities, our strengths are quite different. So it's tapping into that and being able to understand, this is what Dele does well, let him do that. This is what Louisa does well, let her do that, and not like force each other into being in situations that don't play to our strengths.
Yes.
So we're learning that, and it is a learning curve. Another exciting thing is, you know, when you're married to somebody, obviously you know them, but there is a level of unraveling that happens when you're working with somebody as well. And you get to just understand them so much more as a person. I think working with, not just living with each other, has helped us really like learn so much about us in ways that we never would have really learned before. So that's been really exciting too.
Yeah.
I would say the challenge, and probably the challenge because of lockdown, is that it does get intense when you're living together, working together, parenting together, managing everything together. And you don't really have space to like go out and see friends or to take a break. At the end of the working day, I can come to my husband and be like, oh, this is my day, this happened, and this person got on my nerves. But when the person that got on your nerves is the person that you're coming home with, it's different. So I think, but it's made us very patient, and we're always really honest with each other. And one thing that we've said is that regardless of how much we love what we're doing, our relationship and our family is what matters most to us.
Yeah.
And we have very hard and fast rules about not letting the business get in the way of that. So,
And for me, because, you know, my job is 9 to 6, Monday to Friday. So what I do is, once it's 6, I close my laptop, and then 6 to 9 is like family time. Because that's the only way I know I can get family time. Work can be so crazy. Right? And then a lot of times after 9, that's when I start Kunda Kids, you know, when Iria's gone to bed. And then that's why I take a lot of calls. You know, like I'm always on the phone. Louisa is like, Dele, you can't talk. And I'm like, there's a lot that we're trying to get done, right? Especially when you know you really need to be clever around your costs.
Yes.
There are favors you need to call in, you know, and, you know, thankfully, well, I think I have a pretty decent network. So so it's just getting a lot of calls, doing a lot of work late. Why I said I wouldn't recommend, of course, I would always recommend it, but the difficult part in it is doing all of this in lockdown, right? I'm trying to get on a call, and then there's a little toddler running around, and then Lisa is probably upstairs in a meeting at work, which it's sometimes it's total chaos. During December, there was a day we went to the post office and we went to deliver 160 parcels, you know, well, Now, what we worked overnight to get those books out, because we wanted people to get their books before Christmas. When we got to the post office, you know.
That was actual individual orders, was that? Or was that
a wholesale order? There was a time when it was like that daily and we just
were
working overnight.
Yeah,
our hands were blistered from stuffing envelopes.
So
that's a lovely problem to have, though, no?
No, we wanted to get out. But there was lockdown, so nobody could come into our house.
Right.
It was just so difficult. Like we needed to work all night packing books, right? Because we just wanted our customers to be happy. We wanted to get the experience of having Africa's Little Kings and Queens, the books for Christmas.
Yeah.
So it was round the clock. It was really tough. So I think lockdown made it a bit difficult. But while we were doing this, we were still having a lot of fun, drinking coffee.
Lots of coffee.
Watching some basketball and all of that, yeah.
Yeah, and because our son is two, it's that age where he's learning to develop language and wanting to communicate with you. So, you know, times like this when you're really busy, you think, oh, let's just put some TV on. But we actually have banned TV in the house for our son because we don't want the business to get so busy that we stop engaging with our son because you know Dele's on the phone, I'm on my laptop, TV's on, so we're doing everything that we're doing and still making sure like it's reading time, it's play time, it's like, you know, eye contact, I'm with you, let's run around and let's drop everything and just play. So it's not impossible, but it's difficult. But it's always
like it takes a lot of discipline, a lot of communication, but it's
both
disciplined and organized to be able to say, okay, I'm cutting off at this time is now family time, because otherwise it's so easy when you're at home, as I'm sure lots of people are finding out, that it can become very much a blur.
Yeah.
And so with you both being disciplined, and actually I love that you said about not allowing TV on all the time, you know, to ensure that, you know, the time is a quality time that's engaged. Many people listening may even think, oh, that's a really good idea. Why didn't I think of that?
Because what I've realized is every other thing can wait.
If
someone wants to, if someone is trying to get our books from the US, I'm like, yeah, we really want to get the books out, but not at the expense of spending good time with our family, right? Every other thing can wait. The worst case is we'll lose a sale. But that quality time with your son, you won't get it back if you don't. So that's why for me, work, I shut my laptop at 6.
Yeah.
Family time for the next 2 to 3 hours. And then I pick my Kunda kids' laptop after 9.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Well, well organized there. So I wanted to ask you actually, but it sounds like you've already answered it because you seem to have been very, very busy. How has it been? How has the feedback been from people? And have you had to make any tweaks off the back of the feedback? Because you had your little African Kings and Queens series launch officially in November. Yeah. How has it been since then? Because it seems like you've been already very busy.
Yeah, I mean, we had anticipated that it would be good, but it's been like wonderful just to get the feedback. When people take time to, like, there's so many products I love, I buy it, I love it, but no one will ever know because I probably won't call them person and tell them how much I love it. But people genuinely take time out of their day to email us and tell us what an impact that the books have made to their lives, and it's really meaningful, and I'm really glad that we've had such a great reception. Even our local MP has like talked about how much he loves the books, trying to see how he can get them into libraries. We gave them to our son's nursery just to say, you know, I really gave them like, I mean, you know, if you're interested, like, no pressure. And they're just like, they absolutely love them. They're trying to see if they can get the person responsible for rolling out more books across the nursery chain.
Yeah.
The reception has been really wonderful. I feel super blessed about the reception that we've had. Like anything you do, you do look back, and like, I read the books all the time, and I think, and our son is infatuated with the Mansa Musa book. I don't know why. But like, he always picks it, and what the worst thing is, he picks it from the brand new books. Like, we have a couple of brand new books for the customers, and that's the one he wants to pick a new book every day. Anyway, And you do see things and you think, oh, actually, oh, I wish I could have done this and I wish I could have done that. Yeah. So that there are always tweaks that you feel a bit introspective about. But overall, I'm really proud of the feedback that we have.
Yeah. And for me, the feedback that gets me all the time is we've had dozens of people say these exact same words. I wish I had these books growing up.
Yes.
Dozens of people say, oh, kids of these days are so lucky that they have your books.
Yes.
You know, we've had people tell us, thank you for doing this. This is much needed. And just to tell you a little bit about Kunda Kids, I don't know if that question is coming up, but one of the really interesting things that we're doing, right, is when it comes to African storytelling, it's not been a big business industry. It's not commercial enough. Big publishers, you know, big publishers don't take a lot of African stories, right? You know, people have said if you're going to them, they'll just push it aside, especially for kids, right? And then because of that, a lot of writers, when it comes to writing African stories, when they're illustrating, they don't invest so much because they know, I'm going to have to self-publish. I probably wouldn't make a lot of money.
Sure.
And then it's a problem that keeps on going round and round and round. And that's why we don't have so many good African stories out there. And when we launched Kunda Kids, we said we're going to help a lot of writers solve this, right? So you're going to see us put together, you know, illustrators soon, working with writers, helping writers achieve their goals. Like, you know, you want to write an African story, we're going to help you. Really good
illustrator.
Get you a really good illustrator.
Good editor.
Good editor at a very affordable price. And you get the book of your dream. You don't need to
compromise
on the quality that you want for your books. And that was the kind of vision that we had in terms of we're going to do this book at a really, really good quality level.
Yes.
And I'm really excited we're able to do that. And so many exciting things to come this year from Kunda Kids.
Excellent. So Kunda Kids is basically a creative outfit, not just, you know, I saw, you know, in the information you guys sent over that you're also incorporating sound and so, and another element. Can you just tell us a little bit about outside of the books, what else that you're working on or hoping to work on? What's the sound element and what's the other parts of it?
So Kunda Kids is basically, we're basically a content creation studio. All what we do is tell African stories, right? Through books, music, and animations, right? And so right now, our first project has been with the books, and our next projects probably will still be more books, right? But when you look at Africa, one of what makes us really unique all over the continent is our music.
Yes.
African music is beautiful, right? When you look into African culture, right, it's storytelling is embedded into our identity.
Yes, in the traditions.
So which is why we're like, what are the best ways we can bring African stories to life? Of course, books, definitely. But we're also going to bring it to life through music, which is what we do so well all over the continent. And then we also want to bring a lot of that to life in animations, right? Because animations are really good. So, yeah, it's we don't know when we're going to start off the animation phase, like proper. But sometime in the near future, we're going to start the animation phase. Music also, we hope to be able to kickstart the music very soon. But right now, we still think there's a lot of space in terms of getting more books out there because there's a serious lack of representation in the children's book space. So that's pretty much...
I just wanted to talk about that in terms of, because we've just got a few minutes left. As I said, time usually goes really quite quickly. But in terms of the figures, you guys are really disrupting this industry because it was like, I saw a couple of figures floating around, but I think it was 5%, and I saw 3%, and I saw 1%, and I was like, what? This is crazy. What is the challenge that you guys have taken on in terms of the figures?
So according to, I think, the most recent a report that was published by a Children's Literary Agency. The sources on our website, on our About Us, we know that in the UK, 33, so one third of children in school come from ethnic origin background. But we know that only 5% of books target or include a character with an ethnic ethnic background, which is still a bit vague because the, a lot of people can be encapsulated under the term BAME. Specific to Black children, we know that that's only 2% of newly published books which have a Black main character. So some people, and this is something like I'm really happy I get to sort of say, is that because the population of people in the UK, population of Black people in the UK is low, right? People say, well, the population is like 3.4% or thereabouts. Then 2% of books, you know, 2% of books featuring a Black character is not too bad. Like, it's on par with the population. But actually, that is hugely problematic because Black books are not just for Black children. White books are not just for white children. Being exposed to, you know, Eurocentric stories and narratives and characters, which isn't a bad thing. It's just about the balance of representation. So it's the point that we're trying to make is it's not like for like, and that's not what we're aiming for, to ensure that there are more Black books to represent the amount of Black children. It's saying that the balance that all children have in terms of the literature that they consume, the content that they consume, should include a much more varied diet of people, places, that not only help them to feel represented, but allow them to learn about different people so that they can just be inspired. And we know that when children's content fails to provide a good balanced representation of these people and places, it makes young people have an inaccurate view of the world because it makes them think that what they're reading is representative of the world out there.
Hence racism, you know, you're tackling it at the root, you know, from young age, as you said, from 3 to 8. And that's the most formative years that we learn things. And if you're tackling it at that level and it's for everybody, then there'll be, you know, you're already doing
things is what makes children feel like, you know, this is the view they want to have about their neighbor or their friend, or this is why maybe a young person might start having a sense of superiority or start having a sense of inferiority. It starts really early, and it starts with what they consume as content. That's the argument that I like to clarify around not just Black stories for Black stories, all stories for all people.
And for me, it's about all kids need to learn stories about people from all over the world. So because there's just 3% of people in the UK and the experts in the industry are trying to justify why it's just 2% children's book that features a Black main character. That's really problematic because there's a whole continent called Africa with over 1 billion people, right? Children growing up in the UK or growing up in the US, Australia, deserve to learn about other cultures, other races, because that's what will help us build a better continent. And that's why we've written our books in such a, our books are so beautifully written that they appeal to everyone, right? We tell African stories, but we're taking the best of African stories and sharing them with the world because we feel every child needs to have stories coming out of Africa in their library.
Absolutely. And I love that word that you used, Ella, as well. You know, they deserve to know about other children and other cultures. They deserve that. And that's it. You know, it's a gift, you know, when we learn from other people, you know, and it enhances us and empowers us. If you're doing that on a level in schools or in nurseries, even,
It's about acceptance, right? When they accept other cultures in their books, then they'll, you know, it's likely they would accept them when they do grow up.
So it's twofold, self-acceptance and also acceptance of other people, and respect, more importantly, which then bridges the gap with, you know, and chances of the, you know, racism being developed, because obviously they're learning these things from home and sometimes obviously through the institutions being school and then the workplace. So what you're doing is not just a lovely thing to gift somebody, it's a absolutely powerful, you know, trailblazing, and very, very powerful what you're doing. So thank you so much.